time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
How do we survive this? Are we gonna have an NCAA legislation on this to stop this? You can't. I mean, he was still employed by the Big Ten. Somehow he must have talked to the Bears.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
It was up and down. I think there's probably, honestly, there's probably a lot of people in college athletics that are not unhappy with Kevin Warren leaving college athletics.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. We're in a much more controlled situation from the last pod.
Somebody, a certain athletic director, not to be named, came up to me I'm in San Antonio at the NCAA convention, and he said, "I haven't finished the post-championship pod." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, y'all were losing it there about halfway through." And I'm like, "Yeah, we were losing it from
part.
The start." Yeah.
Yeah. That's the part you want to hear.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, Pat's not here today. He's got some other duties to handle, mainly family. All good. So it's just Ross and I. I did have one message. Someone said, "Would you drink your bourbon neat or on the rocks?" And I thought you'd do both.
I do both. It kind of depends on the mood, and it depends on the kind of bourbon. The lower class, class the bourbon, the more I need ice with it. The more higher class bourbon, the better to sip neat.
There you go. Pretty standard behavior.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, although, you know, the I know Julian Van Winkle, and he recommends it with some ice and a little twist of lemon.
Oh, lemon. Interesting. Sometimes I have mine with lime, but
he'll put a little twist of lemon and rub the twist on the edge of the glass, but he says put ice in it. So that's Van Winkle, Poppy Van Winkle.
He would know best.
Yeah, I mean, pretty good expert. So that's how he does it. So who am I to argue? But yeah, okay. So, you know, it was the end of the year. It was a late night. It was strong. Hello, Granny. Is, in the lexicon now. But you're at the convention.
Yes. Yep.
The new president spoke. Charlie Baker did not seem to make much of a headline. Anything happening down there with that? We have a new president. My view is this is a politician who needed a job, and he got a cakewalk of one.
Well, Pat and I sat down with him in an off the record capacity on Wednesday morning, and you know, just because it's off the record, keep the conversation private. But I can just say that it was that I was impressed. I think we both came away pretty impressed. Really engaging, kind of outgoing guy, authentic. Talked a lot about. Not a lot about issues and serious stuff, but just talked, you know, got to know each other kind of thing. I think both Pat and I were pretty blown away. It was supposed to be 30 minutes. It ended up being over an hour with him. You know, just typical politician in a way, though, right? Looks you in the eye. He's your only focus. You know, I was walking through the halls Thursday, so a day after, and he's met with a ton of people, right? And he remembered where I was or where I was from and who I was. Typical, right, politician. Yep, but these are things that we haven't seen from the current leadership of the NCAA. We don't see those things. And so it's a good early sign, but obviously it's an early sign. And he's a huge college sports fan. That was made relatively obvious to us when we sat down with him. Huge Boston Celtics fan. Patriots, huge Patriots fan. You know, I asked him about Tom Brady, huge Tom Brady fan still. So he's a big sports fan, big into it. He had really interested in this job, really interested in preserving college sports in some way, any way that he can. He's going to try to do that, I think. But it's obviously a tall task. And I don't exactly know what the job is and what lies ahead. But early impressions from not just us, but plenty of people here are good. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, look, generally it takes some accomplish to become a governor. So,
In a governor and a Republican governor in a Democratic state with an over 70% approval rating, it's quite stunning.
Yeah, it's certain stuff. I look at this thing, and when you're a governor, I mean, I get it's a hard job. It's going to be hard to build a consensus. They're going to give stuff. To me, it's sort of low stakes when you're comparing to being a governor. Like, they're going to play these games somehow. I'm obviously not in the sky is falling crowd or worrying about all this stuff. Like, when you're the governor, it's like, is governor of Massachusetts, is the T running on time? Or you know, what happens when there's a pandemic? What do I shut down? What do I do? Education? What if there's this disaster? Like, there's a lot of some real stuff going on here. It's like, you know, are we going to let a guy transfer a second time with or without oversight? You know, yeah. Okay. Seems like we'll carry on whatever they come up with. The world will awaken tomorrow morning, you know? So
right.
I bet he's looking at it like, this ain't going to be that bad. Like, even if I lose what we're trying to do, we don't really lose.
Right. And, you know, sometimes I think that college, and I'm the victim of this too, like college sports people, college football people are in a bubble, right? They're just kind of in this bubble, and all of these issues are like, oh my gosh, you know, how are we going to survive? How's the game going to survive? And we're just trapped in this bubble. When people outside the bubble come in and hear about these things, like him, like politicians or judges who rule on cases, and they're like, what is this? You know, or outsiders, commissioners who are outsiders who come in, like the George Klavkoffs and Brett Yormarks and even Kevin Warren, they've come into college sports and it's head scratching to them. Like, you guys, these aren't that big of issues. They seem like they can be simplified, but we do. We're trapped kind of in this college sports bubble, if you will. But yeah, he had bigger problems, I'm sure, in his 8 years as the Massachusetts governor. And so Mark Emmert in the new Charlie Baker, the new president, and Linda Livingstone, which is the chair of the board of governors, I believe, they all kind of gave the main address today at the NCAA convention, because Charlie does not start officially until March 1. So Emmert will go another month and a half. But Linda, in a lot of ways, Linda Livingstone is the Baylor president and, like I said, the chair of the board of governors. She's been running a lot as well. So we got about a month and a half before Charlie really takes over. But already talking to his NCAA staff, man, it's already changed somewhat. I'll give you a little example. The NCAA, well, first of all, allowed us to sit down with him, a few reporters to sit down with him. That was unusual. We didn't get that with the last president a whole lot. And the NCAA communications people did a happy hour for media on Wednesday. And that definitely has not happened before under Mark Emmert's regime. So changes already we're seeing.
Wow. So did they take one of these $5,000 fines from one of the cases? Is this it? Could this be, the $5,000 fine, spend it on the media? I like that.
There you go.
Wow, about happy that? Hour. I should have gone. Had I known that, I might have shown up at that thing.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of outsider commissioners, Kevin Warren, the Big Ten, 3.5-year stint. He comes in from the Minnesota Vikings. And this was one eventful 3.5 years, but he has hit the transfer portal. There was, must have been some tampering. He's looking for a good NIL deal. He's headed back to the NFL. Chicago Bears. Funny how that works. Somebody seeking a better opportunity. Potentially more money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know. Yep. It's absolutely outrageous. We need guardrails to stop this kind of behavior from Kevin Warren. These commissioners just leaving.
You're like off that. And rolling. Sure. He's off and rolling, people.
Okay. How do we survive this? are we gonna have an NCAA legislation on this to stop this? You can't. I mean, he was still employed by the Big Ten. Somehow he must have talked to the Bears. What happened? How'd that work?
Yeah.
I don't know. But no, he's gone. 3.5-year run for Warren. He shows up. I remember people being like, well, it's going to take a while for him to get going and figure it out. Let's run through the greatest hits and not hits. August 2020, all five conferences are going to like walk in lockstep and cancel their season or play together. Seemed to be the mood. Big Ten decides, hell no. They pull the plug on the season for COVID. Nobody else follows other than the Pac-12. The other league schools say, no, we're playing. Then the Big Ten has to reverse. It was highly humiliating and very controversial. And then everyone said, well, that's it for Kevin Warren. He's not doing a very good job. Fans wanted him fired. By 2021, he creates the Alliance in response to the SEC taking Oklahoma and Texas as expansion candidates, two teams that every conference in America would gladly have taken. The Big Ten, ACC, and Pac-12 respond with a little hissy fit and form this nebulous alliance, handshake agreement. No guardrails on that one. They are going to form a voting block, and pretty much the only voting block they did was they blew up the playoff for a while. Then comes 2022, and tampering, transfer portal, NIL deals, all of it. Kevin Warren blows up the handshake deal and poaches UCLA and USC from the Pac-12 so he can sign an even richer media rights deal for the Big Ten, dramatically changing college sports. And now he's gone, just like that. That's a lot going on in 3.5 years.
It is. It was a busy 3.5 years, and he kind of had the unfortunate timing, right, of taking over his first few months on the job was the pandemic. And that was unfortunate for him, and I think a lot of people would probably have said that the decision, that his decision, although it wasn't completely his decision.
Wasn't really all his, yeah.
Yeah, I think the group of Big Ten presidents are the ones that, you know, he works for them, and that, you know, they shut down canceled football. And that was something that, as you said, was just it was up and down. You know, his tenure kind of started on a very low, right, with the pandemic and the shutdown and all that stuff, and maybe his managing style that kind of rubbed some athletic directors and such the wrong way. It started on the low, and then, you know, it kept climbing, and then probably hit its peak when he helped lead the expansion of USC and UCLA, and then signed, right, a billion dollar a year TV contract that is the richest ever signed in college sports history. So it was up and down. I think there's probably, honestly, there's probably a lot of people in college athletics that are not unhappy with Kevin Warren leaving college athletics. I think there's probably a lot of people in a lot of commissioners, a lot of people in the CFP commissioner room, mainly based on the, as you mentioned, the alliance and the negotiations over CFP playoff, expanded playoff, that are not unhappy to see him leave. You know, and I think there's some ADs specifically in his league, not unhappy to see him leave. I think there was frustration with Kevin Warren in college athletics, with college athletics, from his vantage point. He was a pro guy. I think like a lot of people, like we said earlier, gets into college athletics and kind of says, what? It operates this way? Why? You know, where is the contracts and the regulation, and where is the one commissioner leadership? In college athletics doesn't have any of that. And I think that frustrated him a lot. And it was probably a big reason why he wanted to get back to professional sports. And this is no surprise. Obviously, ESPN reported about it a couple of weeks ago that this was probably coming. But even before that, you know, he has had a few interviews with pro teams over the last probably year-ish.
But he was under contract with the Big Ten. So we know they wouldn't tamper like that.
Speaking of his contract, right? He's entering in the fourth year. He was entering in the fourth year of a 5-year contract, had not been extended. Something to note.
Oh, maybe he was out.
Maybe.
I don't know how the Big Ten could get rid of, I mean, he made them rich.
Yeah, it was going to be hard. It was going to be hard to not renew him. But the fact that they haven't, you know.
Yeah. I found Kevin Warren to be, he was like a mirror up to the whole operation. I mean, it was just straight cutthroat business, but he didn't have he didn't always play the BS. He would repeat some of the stupid talking points, but like, yeah, you these suckers are just going to go in on a handshake deal. Sure.
Yeah. Yes, handshake. We see what handshake happened there, right? He, a year into the handshake, or 11 months into the handshake deal, He took an alliance members teams. You know, one thing I'll say too, I think a lot of Big Ten people feel this way. The Big Ten should have never been a part of this alliance. They were the last team, last league that needed to join some kind of alliance. It should have never happened in the fact that, you know, they took two teams from another alliance member should tell you that they never should have been a part of the alliance.
Well, yeah, but that like might have dropped their guard. I mean, it probably didn't matter. They could have gotten them any point, but whatever tactic he used, clearly the goal for the Big Ten was to max out the money and gain as much power as possible. And they did that in twofold way. One was by adding the value of Los Angeles and creating X number of more marquee games, particularly with USC and potentially with UCLA. But it was also by weakening the Pac-12 and leaving the conferences that were bidding to not really have a plan B and say, well, if I don't get the Big Ten, the Pac-12 is a suitable secondary option. Because once you took USC and UCLA out, they were a weakened competitor. So now the Big Ten became the only option because the SEC was already wrapped up with CBS. I mean, with ESPN, my bad. So it was very, very cutthroat. I don't know whether they could have kept USC and UCLA anyway, but if it got the Pac-12 to fall for the okey-doke, whatever tactic it was, that was it. Now, fans, I can certainly mount the argument. I don't know if I believe it, but there's certainly a fair counter-argument of like, how's this all going to work? What did we just do to our league? This is unfair to some of the other sports, all sorts of stuff. Is this really good for the Big Ten to have this LA outpost other than money? You know, like if you're a fan, you're not getting the money. You know, so, you know, who cares, right? You know, is this a good thing? But Kevin Warren and didn't care. And it's obviously he's working at the behest of his presidents. But in terms of what he was assigned to do, he did it. And he just wrecking balled everybody.
Wanted to throw another wrecking ball, right? I mean, he wanted to keep going.
Yeah, keep going. He would have kept wrecking balling everybody. He didn't care who he double-crossed. He didn't care if he sat there and said, hey, why are these guys not going for this playoff? Wait, they're going to fall for that? The playoff would actually strengthen those leagues and maybe make it harder for me to get these leagues. So let's table it. And they went with it. If they think we're friends and we're going to have a scheduling thing, maybe they're not paying quite as much. Whatever it was, he just came in and said, this is the business. I'm done. And I can certainly understand the hurt feelings by everybody else, but so, you know, I get it, but at the same time, he did everything he was supposed to do for the Big Ten, and now he's gone, and he's hoping one day he becomes commissioner of the NFL, and if at the very least, he's running the Chicago Bears. But, I mean, that was an unbelievable 3 years of impact that will last 50.
Oh, for sure. One of the things I wonder, we're talking about the conference realignment. You know, he was pushing really hard to continue to expand. Even the things publicly he'd say about the door's not closed, you know, in 5 years things are still going to be moving. He gave clues that he was not done with the expansion portion. And there were a lot of, I think, probably reports that are going to prove to be inaccurate that they were, you know, in the middle of negotiations to add a couple Pac-12 teams and all this stuff. But there was real pushback against that in the room of Big Ten athletic directors and the presidents. I don't know that he had everybody on board with continuing to expand. But he was the big one that wanted to do it and at least publicly kind of gave clues that it was him that was behind it and wanted to do it. And now with him being gone, you wonder if there is some stability coming a little more. The Pac-12 gets their TV rights deal done. You do wonder if, maybe there's a little stability here since he's going to be moving on and he was the one kind of pushing it. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it has to make financial sense. And we've discussed this obviously a lot in the last offseason. It just doesn't seem like Oregon, Washington add enough value to make it worthwhile. Then, yeah, if you're a lot of these teams, you go, 16's an awful lot already, man. We're already big, but really, really interesting tenure. It's some of it's good, Some of it's bad. Some of it's just different. Who knows? Who knows what's coming? But that was an absolute decisive and divisive character that barreled through.
Yeah.
And just didn't really care. Upended the supposed congeniality of college athletics. I mean, it's not like he was the first one to do conference realignment or lie or double cross or anything like that. But I think he was pretty effective for the Big Ten in a ruthless manner. So whatever they paid him, I'm sure it was pretty good. He earned it. He certainly did not have ulterior motives, right? Like, you know, Delaney was always going to protect the Bulls. And it didn't make sense to what they were trying to do when Jim Delaney was running the Big Ten. It made sense when he became a consultant for the Bulls right after. But it didn't always make sense. But Kevin Warren just was like, yeah, we're going to get this done. And I don't know if it was, maybe it wasn't all part of a master plan, but if it was, it was a pretty good one.
Well, I think part of them, if there was a master plan, and you said it earlier, right? I mean, Kevin has aspirations, right? To potentially be, you know, he hasn't said this publicly, but privately enough people have told me and obviously have shared it with you too, right? That he would like to preside over the NFL and be the NFL commissioner. It's starting to get out more and more that like that's his goal. So he was going to do all he could for the Big Ten because that's his job, obviously, but also because like any of us who have aspirations to move up in the world, he's gonna pad that resume and right. Boy did he, right? I mean, he can say that he helped craft the most lucrative television deal in the history of college sports and potentially arguably the biggest addition to
a league. He made a surgical expansion and then landed the biggest deal of all time. And I don't know that if he wasn't like, hey, I'm going to be here 5 years. I'm getting stuff done now. I'm not here for the long haul. I'm not letting it play out. Like college sports likes to go real slow, right?
Hmm.
And this goes to like, I get why they're doing it because they really don't have enough time, but like the idea, and they have the contracts, but it's like almost everybody you talk to in college athletics, like our quarterfinals in the 12-team playoff have to be on campus. Like a lot of people are like, that's where it's going to end up. Just might not be this cycle, right? Like, that's how college sports does stuff. And it's like, well, why, if something's better idea, why, like in business, you don't sit around and go, we've got a great idea for a car model or a new iPhone, but we're going to keep building these other phones for a little while and we'll wait on the No, you like get that thing to market, right? You get your best product to market. And so he just was like, bang, we're going to get this done and this done. And then I'm out of here. I'm going back to the league. And then I'm going to try to get that job. I'm 59 years old. So I don't know. Again, I don't know if it was all planned or not, but you could certainly make the case it was. But he will have a massive impact. And he doesn't have to worry about, like, you know what? Maybe adding these California schools wasn't a good idea. You know, I don't know if that's really going to be the case, but he doesn't really have to worry about all that. Or how are you going to work with these guys in the future when no one trusts you? Not here.
Yeah, he. Like I said earlier, it was a real kind of struggle for him to deal with the slowness and the archaic nature of college athletics.
All right, my favorite current recruiting story. Jaden Rashada, the quarterback. 5-star by some, 4-star, very good, highly rated quarterback from Pittsburgh, California. Was originally supposed to go to Miami. Then he was going to sign or did sign with Florida. Did he sign his letter? I think he did sign his letter.
He did.
Now he's trying to back out of that letter, reportedly, due to, you'll know the story better, but NIL concerns, rumors are flying. People are up in arms. It'd be a huge loss for Florida, which desperately needs him. Everyone's blaming everything NIL. You know, this is the first time a recruit has ever flipped in the history of college football. So I can understand why it's a real problem. this type of stuff's never happened. We need to overhaul everything because one kid doesn't want to go to Florida, or maybe he does. What's the latest with Jaden Rashada? This is a juicy little Florida recruiting battle going down.
It is. You know, I kind of kept waiting for one of these to become public. There's been some trickling out of things where a collective hasn't paid or whatever, and so a player gets in the portal or whatnot. But most of those things have been kept pretty tight in private. So I was kind of waiting for one to become public, and it's happened, right? Jaden Rashada, let's go through the whole timeline. He committed to Miami, got an NIL deal with Miami. Then he decommitted and got an NIL deal with to Florida. So decommitted from Miami, committed to Florida, got an NIL deal with the Gators, and the Gator Collective signed a contract with the Gator Collective that multiple people have said, and now it's been reported, I think, I believe the Orlando Sentinel, and information that I've heard from sources confirm it. It was supposed to be a $13 million contract that he signed with the Gator Collective. I think the collective thought that they had the backing of some boosters to get that money to Jaden Rashada, and it seemed like they did not in the long run. And a termination letter was sent from the Gator Collective to Rashada before signing day, actually terminating the deal because they did not have the money to pay him.
Gators can't pay their bills.
He still signed with Florida, which is a baffling part of this story. I don't understand that part of it. He signed with Florida, deal didn't come through, and now he wants out of his letter of intent, which I firmly believe Florida is going to let him out of his letter of intent. However, despite the On3 story that posted on Wednesday, he has not requested, as of 6 p.m. on Thursday night, he has not requested to be let out of his letter of intent. I think that might be coming, but it hasn't come yet, and I do expect Florida to let him out. But, you know, also, you know, Jaden Rashada, like a lot of recruits, he's been involved too in some interviews with the NCAA. The NCAA's been prying into a lot of different schools and recruits about NIL related infractions, you might say. And so there's a lot going on there. And by the way, I think we're going to see over the next few weeks, months, there's going to be some announcement of penalties and things like that for violations of NIL stuff. The NCAA is digging into all that. And I think this Florida issue is going to be right at the heart of it. So this is the first kind of public one that we've seen, a public, big, high-profile one that we've seen where a collective, you know, didn't pay up. And I'd imagine we have dozens and dozens of these, and we probably will.
So is this a contract holdout? Is this a contract holdout where he's either going to get the money or he's going to get some part of the money?
I don't think he's going to get any of the money.
$13 million for this guy?
$13 million was the number on the,
but
on the contract.
But it was fake money, yeah.
Yes.
They're running a Ponzi or something.
For whatever reason, there was an issue with, communication issue that boosters weren't, boosters or a booster, was not in the end, not wanting to pay that much.
Yeah, well, there was at least somebody smart in this whole thing.
There's a lot of incompetence.
You're going to raise $13 million to pay the 56th best player in the country from Pittsburgh, California.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I can see where that fell down. Yeah, these things are definitely going to happen. And it doesn't worry me at all. I have concerns over any kid that's just like, if I'm a coach trying to build a program, like how loyal is this kid? What, like, you know, I'm all for the guys getting the money, but when you're, if this is why someone is coming, then it's easier for them to leave, right? So it's sort of a buyer beware situation when guys are flipping, or it's, you know, if you can get them on a promise of money, but you know, that's an enormous amount of money for someone to deliver. And obviously that was over like what, 5 years or something.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. And there was a signing bonus involved that we had heard, and he didn't get that either. So a lot of broken promises.
What is going on in Gainesville? They collecting cans, they clipping coupons.
Well, I think we're going to see probably a change with some of how the collectives in Gainesville run or who's running them. It sounds like there's going to be probably some changes after this incident.
I was talking to someone who's at a very wealthy school, and their collective, they think, is up to a pledged $7 million. But then they don't know that, like, it's all going to come through. Is it what's happens the next year? Like, I can see these, a lot of these guys throwing promises out that no one's going to be able to keep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not an NFL owner that has, you know, $4 billion and the hell they want to pay it. But right. But they have it. This is like a collective that has the promise of donations every year and hope they have that kind of money.
Yeah. I mean, college athletics lives, athletic departments live on the donations from boosters. And often donations from boosters are start out as pledges. And sometimes those pledges don't turn into actual cash donations for whatever reason. And I think this is one of those example of that. And I think, again, at several places, I think this has happened over the last year, and it's just been kept a little privately, or hasn't happened to such a high profile recruit or player. And yeah. Now we're seeing it. We're seeing what's probably going to continue to happen. And you know what? I'll say this: there's a lot of big time college athletic executive types who love this story because they want the chaos to get Congress's attention.
Yeah. And so they're drumming it up as chaos, but like, what's the chaos?
Well,
I get what they're trying to do. And this is panic. Right. This is the end of the world.
Right.
One kid isn't going to a school, but you know what he'll do next year? He'll go to another school.
Right. Right. Well, I think from their vantage point, it is up. The kid was promised this, signed a contract and got duped. That's wrong and shouldn't happen, and we need rules to prevent something like that from happening.
Well, if it's a real contract, he can sue him.
Well, that... But
it's probably not.
Well, that may happen, and we haven't seen that yet, but that's coming. I mean, that's going to be the next thing. I mean, that... I don't know if it happens in this case, but that's going to be the next thing. We're going to see a kid and his family sue a collective and maybe even a school. It's
right, for
it's
the promise the of this contract, yeah. But... is what's the contract say, and that'll be really interesting. But there, we have a system for that. It's called the civil courts. I look at it like, okay, this is a wild story, and like if you're Florida, I mean, you're desperate for a quarterback, particularly right now, and you're trying to gain recruiting member, it's a blow to your program, undoubtedly, and you're frustrated. Mm-hmm. But like I said, people have been flipping recruits or not showing up or whatever forever, right? Mm-hmm. It happens. But in terms of the need for the United States government to weigh in, it's not like the kid won't play. He will go to a different school and play football. He'll probably make some money.
Yeah. And this is a lesson too, should be a lesson for everybody, but certainly for other players too. Hey, if the number is too big to be true, exactly. It's probably too big to be true. $13 million for a 17-year-old is probably too big to be true.
Right. It's pretty wild. Pretty wild story. But yeah, Florida's got that's just an enormous amount of money on this guy. And so, yeah, it's blowing up. I don't know. But it's a semi-holdup. I don't know. We're going to see where he ends up. Where do you think he ends up?
I don't think he ends up at Florida or Miami. So it'll be, I don't know. There's
someone's going to get him late on the bounce.
Yeah, right, right. And I'm sure wherever he ends up, I mean, he's super talented. I don't know, but I'd expect that within the next day, maybe by the time this podcast is out or by the time you listen to it, it probably will have been resolved. And it would be a pretty big shock to me if he does end up at Florida. I think that they have a letter. I think they're on their way to letting him out of his, or he's on his way to at least requesting it and letting him out. It sounds like the family, as of Thursday night, is kind of talking and discussing their options.
Be hard to go to a school, and this is something like you got to control your collective. It's like someone's promising $13 million, and all of a sudden it's like that money's not coming in. You lose the recruit because like you're boosters overpromised, because even if he got $6 million, let's say, they're like, well, we can't do 13, how about $6 million, which would be more than anyone else is paying you or something like that, it'd still be like, man, like I was supposed to get that. Like, it's just hard feeling. So Florida needs a quarterback, and interestingly, and this was kind of a surprise, but LSU freshman Walker Howard, who I think would be able to redshirt. I don't think he played much at all this year, but he was a top 50 recruit last year. His dad was a quarterback at Jamie Howard, was his quarterback at LSU. I don't think people really saw him leaving, but guys want to play, right? And he didn't get to play this year. They brought in Jaden Daniels from Arizona State. He could be headed to Florida. He has hit the transfer portal. I think someone named Walker Howard, when they hit the transfer portal, they should come out with their name, Howard Walker. I guess you get washed around in there. No, TCU and Florida seem like the potential landing spots for that one. How big of a shock was that to the LSU program when Walker Howard took off?
Yeah, pretty surprising. Legacy kind of player, like you mentioned, Jamie Howard played at LSU. Still, you know, Jamie has been pretty involved with LSU. He still lives in Louisiana. It was definitely surprising. You know, and it probably says a lot about the talent there in the quarterback room at LSU. You know, Jaden Daniels is coming back and Garrett Nussmeier is behind him and has looked pretty good at times. So I think this is a product of a playing time. And in years past, you know, Walker Howard would have had to sit for a year, maybe two, maybe three before getting a shot, kind of like Miles Brennan, former LSU quarterback who sat for like 4 years basically before getting a starting season. Now you don't have to do that anymore, and you probably never should have had to do that, and you're free reign to go elsewhere. I did see, I think, a Rivals report that was like, you know, 99% chance that he ends up at TCU. But
you think it's going to be TCU? All right.
That may have changed because
I saw some Florida, but yeah.
Yeah, amid all this, TCU has just lost their offensive coordinator. So I don't know how that impacts.
That's right. Now he could be going, he could be transfer portaling to Clemson.
I think he is. Yeah, I think he's transfer portaling. So, and Clemson is by Friday afternoon, I think it'll be released that Clemson's hiring Garrett Riley, the offensive coordinator at TCU, Lincoln's brother, who helped lead the Frogs to the national championship game. I'm guessing it's quite the bag that he is getting from the Tigers. So, Dan, there you go. You know, coach is on the move in the portal. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. I don't want to keep saying it, but I just thought, yeah.
So the
commissioners, coaches, players, it's all good. It'll work out.
The big thing about this move is Dabo Swinney fired someone. And that doesn't happen very often. He fired Brandon Streeter, who went to Clemson, has been on staff for a while. Dabo promoted him multiple times and elevated him to offensive coordinator after Tony Elliott left, and then fired him after a year. That does not happen very often with Dabo. So I think that this is probably a product of Clemson's record the last couple of years, you know, not making the CFP, struggling at times offensively, struggling at times at the quarterback position. It's also a combination. Part of the deal is you're able to get, you know, Garrett Riley. You're able to get a guy who impressed a lot of people over the last few years, especially last season. So, interesting move, certainly. And TCU is now looking for an offensive coordinator. And, that could definitely impact, you know, the transfer decision of a one Walker Howard.
And then you're still going to have the Georgia QB battle with Carson Beck, Brock Vander Griff, and Gunnar Stockton. All three of them aren't going to be back. Like, we still have another wave of, like, the post. Like, all three of those guys are going to fight for Stetson Bennett's job, right? In the spring, Beck's got the inside track. Obviously, he was the one who was playing at the end of the national championship game. But, I mean, Vandergriff and Gunnar Stockton are both, like, really highly ranked recruits. Like, to me, this is just, it'll continue to spread out talent. Like, that's not going to stock. You're just not going to stock these guys on teams anymore. No one's waiting. We're going to go somewhere to play and, you know, hey, whatever. So you got all that. But to go to Clemson, maybe most notably too about this, with not only did Dabo fire somebody from the family, right? But he's going to go outside the family to bring in a new voice, a new concept, a new vision and all that. It's felt like, and obviously there's been a lot of criticism that Clemson has been slow on the react as the game has changed, right? They were slow to change some of their recruiting. You know, they'd have the recruiting policy, like, if you commit here, you don't get to visit anywhere else, right? That was one of their things. And
no transfers.
No transfers,
we
right?
See him some of these getting transfers now.
Right. And I believe in my guys. I don't want them transferring out. I'm not going to bring a guy in. I'm going to develop my guy. All very noble concepts, but just not how college sports works. I mean, we're just talking about Kevin Warren on down. That isn't really how it works. So you can try it, and maybe it works when you got enough guys. You got Trevor Lawrence and stuff like that, Deshaun Watson, but it hasn't worked lately. But to go that outside route, I wrote about this in a different capacity, but like it was like when Saban said, I need to get my offense as good as my defense. I have to change the perception of how Alabama's offense is viewed by elite recruits. I can't have A.J. McCarron and the Greg McElroys and stuff like that who are really good players, but I need to go better. And my receivers, yeah. I can't just have one guy. I need a whole room of them. And he went and said, I'm going to hire Lane Kiffin. And I mean, that was a, mm-hmm. you know, it's like Lane Kiffin was a 38-year-old, just got fired, and it's been antics and right, the whole thing. And he said, yeah, but this guy's innovative. And then all of a sudden, boom, the offense changes. And then all of a sudden, it's like Jalen Hurts is coming and Tua is coming and Mac Jones and Bryce Young and the you know the incredible run of receivers. Everything changed with Alabama, but that was a great moment of Saban. And one of the reasons Saban's so good is he didn't wait for. I think they you know that came after a 2-loss season, but they were 11-1 or something going into the Auburn game. It was 2000 after the 2013 season. But this is a sign to me that William Christopher Sweeney is at least looking and saying, "Hey, we got to do something different," and this is a first or one of the first steps towards that.
Well, and it reminds me of maybe one of the last times he fired somebody, which was the current coach of the Florida Gators. He fired Billy Napier, I think, in 2014 or 15. He was offensive coordinator also. Fired him and hired Chad Morris, which that kind of started the rise of the Clemson Tigers under Deshaun Watson and Chad Morris, and came in with this high school offense and jazzed it up. So that's kind of the last time we saw this happen. So you wonder if, you know, this does what that did and enliven, bring a fresh take to Clemson staff and in its offense. We'll see. He certainly got the quarterback talent to do it. Klubnik.
Cade.
Obviously, Cade right? Klubnik. Cade Klubnik. He showed out pretty good in the Cade Klubnik era. Began at Clemson, and now we'll see what Garrett Riley can do with them.
Yeah, now they're going to be it's going to be a program to watch. Another bit of news, more weird, cryptic, say nothing tweets from Ann Arbor
tonight. Yes.
You got to read between the lines, like it's a good time, right?
It's very college football. College football.
Harbaugh's out here trying to get an NFL job. There's the specter of this NCAA thing, which is all his doing. You've got this fan kind of revolt over two parts. The Harbaugh camp's done a good job getting their side out. You know, these sanctions come from meaningless events, including a hamburger, and you know, someone bought a hamburger. All true, but that's not why he's being punished. It's because he may have allegedly lied to the NCAA, or not cooperate. That was it, right? So it's real simple. The original crime, no, not even the NCAA believes is a big deal. But they've kind of turned that into a farce, which is fine. And then that you know, the he needed to get paid. Now, he just got a new deal a year ago. So you pay him again, you know, I would. But you can understand why, considering you're getting, your guy just, lied to the NCAA, allegedly. The NCAA saying they lied. He's almost certainly going to get sanctioned. And we don't know whether he's going to cooperate in the future. And you just gave him a contract. Maybe you're a little slow to just say, hey, let's just hand over a checkbook. So you got all this stuff. And then all of a sudden on Thursday night, the president of the school sends out a tweet. I'll just read it. It's not even a little grammar on, you know, the president, I guess. I don't know. I'm pleased to share that I have been having very positive and constructive conversations with our athletic director and football coach, everything capitalized. Ward Manuel and I both want to see Jim Harbaugh stay as the head football coach at the University of Michigan Wolverines. Okay. And then Harbaugh, what did Harbaugh say? He sent something back. Wait,
like, he supports Harbaugh. The statement of the president.
Yeah, he supports this.
What are we doing? bizarre. It's like so everything's written in Harbaugh like, grunts.
Harbaugh speaks like he writes, like he speaks.
It's some grunting statements we get. So what does this mean? They're working on a contract extension, I guess?
I think they will work on a contract. They'll get a contract. But what it means is Harbaugh is more likely than not now to cooperate with this investigation and take his hit. That is how I'm reading it.
If he doesn't get an NFL job.
If he gets the NFL job, he's probably gone. But if he doesn't get the NFL job, he's probably not going to fight to the death with the NCAA over this stupid thing. He's just going to get suspended for a couple games or whatever the hell is going to happen. And Michigan's going to pay him because he's very, very valuable employee right now. And this whole thing will, in like 3 years, be like, remember that weird fever dream of like 2 weeks when that happened? I don't know. But I mean, how many, do you want to do this every year with the NFL? If you're Michigan, I mean, I would pay Harbaugh because he is worth the money. And if you have a coach that is making it, that is successful, pay him. Because you've got the money. And it's easier to find the money than it is to find a coach that can get you to back-to-back college football playoffs and win back-to-back league titles. So you've got the guy, I'd pay him. But I certainly understand where you're like, dude, we just gave every time we get a deal and every time you say I'm not leaving and then you keep looking around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's like, all right, you got to get out of your feelings and just deal with it. This is Harbaugh. But I mean, is he going to do this again next year? And do you really want to be like, hey, Jim, here's, it's like, I don't know. It's like you're begging for a date here. And he's like, yeah, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Reminds me a little bit when Nick Saban was at LSU. It's like every year he was at LSU, Nick Saban was looking to the pros and was being courted. Right. And in fact, 1 year he interviewed with the Bears. I remember maybe after his second year at LSU, he interviewed with the Bears. But he interviewed multiple times with multiple NFL teams. And like every year, you know, he got a contract extension and a raise from LSU because they were doing so well. But they knew what was coming. He was going to flirt with the NFL every offseason until he left. And it reminds me just like it. And of course, he left.
Right. So I don't know. There's a better chance now that he returns than not. And like I said, any suspension they can work out, like who cares? They're not playing anyone for like the first 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, it felt like 50-50. We talked about like his chances of going to the pro. It felt like 50-50. Couple weeks ago, but it doesn't feel like 50-50 anymore. It feels
nobody's jumped to hire him yet. Staying. It's still early, right? Nobody, as we speak, nobody in the NFL has been hired.
Yeah.
But it is Thursday, and the NFL doesn't do things. It's done in a more professional manner than college athletics, which is like this cloak and dagger, right? Nobody actually interviewed for the job, nothing. Right. And, you know, it's like, let's talk to seven people. So he still could get, definitely get a job, but nobody hired him in the first 2 days, right? It's been 4 days now, no one's hired him. So I don't know. As each day goes on, you know, maybe the chances go. It's just a weird dynamic, especially considering a year ago he said he wasn't going to do it. Nobody knew about these violations till like a week ago, and he should be basking in the best time going. And he's a very important 2024 recruiting class that he could actually do really well at if he was working on that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I said, with all this transfer portal stuff and the more this goes on, those high school recruits, I don't even know if you bother recruiting anyone outside the top 250 or something anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at these quarterbacks. We just talked about all these quarterbacks you could still get, right? Like you could still get Jaden Rashada, Walker Howard, and say Brock Vandergriff are all going to be available in the next, either now or at the end of the year. Like, you're going to spend like 3 years recruiting some high school quarterback, and you can grab one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if Michigan is calling any of those guys, they're going to pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, it's good to get, it's, you got to recruit them, but I don't know. I mean, everyone's on the move.
Transient college football has become, in basketball has been probably for a while.
Transient. Everything's nature. 1 year. Yeah. Yep. The coaches move. Everyone moves 1 year, 1 year at a time. See what you got. Obviously you'll get your guys. You can hope, are your base, and you need them. But yeah, like a bad recruiting class doesn't matter as much as it used to.
Right. I will say that actually here in San Antonio yesterday, Wednesday, the D1 Council, one of the things they did was approve to make the waiver process for second time transfers and third time transfers, basically multi-time transfers, was to make the waiver process more difficult and stricter. I think this is probably going to backfire into a bunch of lawsuits.
Yeah, it just seems like they let that, they lost that war, right?
They cracked the door. It's hard to like keep it cracked and not it be kicked open. It's a multi-year transfer, really. And, you know, because of players lawyering up and stuff, they can do that now. And the NCAA kind of like trying to,
to try now we're going to get tough on these guys. Yeah, first off, how many of them are there? I don't know what. So a couple things here. And look, I've said this all the time. I would have never allowed the automatic. I had no problem if they held the line with you have to sit out a year because I did not believe that was a punitive. It was not a punishment. So I would have been fine if they did that, but they didn't. And now it's too late.
Yeah. You can't go back.
Like you, right. Can't go back. So here we are. What is the argument that the second transfer isn't fair as the first?
Like the NCAA's argument? Of why,
like you can cheat on right. your significant other once, but not the second.
There's not a great argument. That's the problem. They're going to lose any court battle, right? They're going to lose to an attorney because there's not a good argument for that.
And then, do grad transfers count, or if you graduate, you can do it still?
Yeah, you can graduate. You can do it. Yeah.
So most guys, right. I mean, this isn't going to be a big number, right?
You wouldn't think so.
I don't think there's a million people in a first off after three to four years. You're going to graduate. So you'd have to have, you can only transfer three times in that span or 12. I mean, so you go one year, then you transfer. Then you go another year, you transfer again, or you wait another year and you graduate. Like I don't think that's going to be a big number, but I look at the kids who are like, I signed with Central Michigan. I had this bang up freshman year. Wisconsin wants to get me. I go there, or Indiana wants to get me. I go there. I have a really good season now. Alabama wants me. I'm going to go there. Mm-hmm. Or I'm Alabama recruit. I'm not making this team. This was all wrong. I never should have come here. So I go to Indiana, and I'm going to try to get some playing time there. They're going to take a flyer on me because I was a high recruit. And I'm not really working out here, but I can go to Central Michigan. I'm going to play. Like, that's probably the motivation. I know they're, like, going against the idea of, like, there's just some kid out there that just can't make up his mind. But, like, so what? Like, buyer beware. If that guy wants to leave, let him leave. So I don't know where you make the argument. What was their argument for this? There wasn't
not a great one. I mean, they'll say academic stuff. They'll say, like, it's going to lower GPA stuff. You know, if you let a kid, transfer multiple times, then it's going to negatively impact his academic progress and his progress to graduation. That's probably the main thing. That's probably the main argument.
Right. Like nanny stating it like that. Yeah, we got it. I mean, if the kid's not happy at a place, he's not going to do well.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if a coordinator leaves and goes, if I did that coordinator path, man, that guy had a great year as the linebacker coach at Central Michigan. They're great. I got an opportunity to go to Indiana, and I'm going to be the linebacker coach there. And then they kill it. And then Alabama says, you want to be the linebacker coach here? And you go.
Yep.
You go, well, that guy just isn't committed to the cause. It's going to work. His 401k is not going to work as well because it's rolling over too much. Like, come on, man. I don't know what the argument is. They're just like looking for stuff. They have to regulate, right? They just they cannot get out of it.
That's it. Yeah, it's a control. It's control.
They get twitchy. They get twitchy. Got to control something. We're going to find that random kid, and that's it. You stay at Indiana.
And I'm in, I'm going to play like devil's advocate a little bit.
To my devil's advocate?
Yeah. 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 And say that they'll say that commissioners and athletic directors trying to control this and trying to regulate, they'll say, we're doing it for the protection of a teenager or early 20-something who, can't choose himself or can't make wise decisions himself or are impacted or influenced by, and this, this does happen, right? By agent types and uncle whoever and whatever. But
how much money is a kid transferring three times worth? I don't know, man. It's babysitting. It's patronizing. It really is. It just is. I get it, though. They can't help themselves. This is how they view the world. They're supposedly saving these kids. They're not saving anybody. And they're just looking for somebody to do it on. All right. One quick story before we go. This has been a serious issue. This has been a little too issue driven. Carl's Jr. You know, the hamburger chain Carl's Jr.
Hardee's in my neck of the woods.
Yeah. Hardee's, yeah. Is it exactly the same?
Yeah.
Really?
I believe it's exactly the same. Yep. In the South, we have Hardee's. In the whatever, Midwest.
Midwest is... I think it's like the West is Carl's Jr.
Oh, is the West.
I didn't know they were exactly the same. I knew there was some kind of like...
I am almost certain.
All right. Well, whatever. Carl's Jr. has put out a wine pairing bundle for their hamburgers. So if you want the Carl's Jr. limited time A1 double cheeseburger, they think you should open a bottle of NP Origins Pinot Noir.
What?
Yes, Carl's Jr. has wine.
Wow.
And they also have a Blend Your Happy Red Blend that also would go with it.
Wow.
So you can buy a bottle, you can buy a bundle for $62. You get the wine. And the offer comes with a free A1 double cheeseburger coupon for $1 or something like that. I don't know. Hmm. But right now, through February 7th, they are trying to pair wine with their double cheeseburger. Have you ever had a fast food hamburger and said, I really feel like a nice Pinot Noir would complement this?
No, never, ever, ever. No matter how good the beef patty was, I was not craving a Pinot Noir or Merlot with my
red blend with my
burger or my chicken fingers or hot dog or whatever they have there. By the way, Carl's Jr. and Hardee's does share the brand. I guess I don't know if they're owned and operated by the same people. Carl's Jr. started in L.A., hot dog stand, by the way. That's how they started, a hot dog stand, which I never really knew. Started and opened the first business in Anaheim. And Hardee's, it started in North Carolina in 1960. And they did seem to, I guess, merge. They merged in the 70s and 80s under the Hardee's Food System Corporation. So there you go. So it is. It's identical.
They are. Yeah, I'm looking now. Hardee's is in all the states. Yeah, like Pennsylvania, there's none in the Northeast. And then they basically have everything until you get to Texas, like almost a diagonal line, like Texas, Colorado, Idaho, that bit, Carl's Jr. So this is a real Pac-12, Big Ten. This is what UCL, this is really what Kevin Warren was trying to do.
Yeah.
Confuse right. the fans.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't know they were the same one. I don't want the wine. No, I'm not buying the $62. Get two bottles of Carl's Jr. wine. I mean, I guess they're in like Sonoma and all that, but I'm not doing it.
Nope.
You can get like 10 40s to pair with your double cheeseburger instead.
There you go.
It'll go better.
There you go. Much better.
I don't really think, look, fast food, alcohol inspires a lot of fast food purchases, but I don't feel like alcohol goes very well with fast food.
No. Well, I don't know. Like a hot dog and a beer sounds kind of good.
But that's not like fast food. That's like hot dog and a beer at the ball game type thing.
Yeah, but
If you're at McDonald's, you're not like, man, I wish they served beer here.
No. But if they served hot dogs, maybe I would. Like there's some fast food hot dog chains. One of my favorites is out of Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Shoot. Of course, I'm going to forget the name of it, but it's a fast food chain in Hattiesburg, and it's known for its chili dogs, and they are Wards, WARD, Wards, and they are freaking amazing. Of course, terrible for you, but they have these huge hot dogs lathered in chili and cheese. Give me a beer with my Wards hot dog.
All right. Well, if Wards starts brewing, because that's true, burger and a beer works at like a brewery. I don't know.
Sure, yeah.
Anyway, I ain't touching your Carl's Jr. wine. Y'all fooling me, Carl, and your little smiley star and that whole thing. I don't know who you are, Carl, but I ain't buying your one. All right, that's our show. Like I said, a little tamer, trying to get back a little. We're trying to recalibrate a little bit. Pat will be back next week. We'll ramp it up a little bit more. Not sure what the schedule exactly will be, but next week. But that's why you should subscribe. Stick with us, and we will talk to you later.